This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The phone system stopped working for a few hours a couple of weeks ago in several American cities. The diagnosis? A computer problem. And this interview is about what the problem was and how similar computer problems might affect you in the future. You have my word, we won't use any confusing high-tech lingo in this interview. The only fancy word you need to know is computer software. Computer software is the technical term for the instructions a computer is programmed to follow. And as our computer software gets more complex, there's more room for error, the kind of error that caused the phones to fail. My guest Leonard Lee is the author of a book about the new problems that have accompanied our new advances in software. It's called The Day the Phone Stopped. The title refers to January 15, 1990, when half the long-distance lines around the nation were disabled because of one tiny error in a software program. Coincidentally, right when Lee's book hit the stores 3 weeks ago, the phones stopped again. I asked Lee to explain what happened this time.
What happened was on June 26th, phones in two cities, Los Angeles and most of the Washington, D.C. area, including the surrounding areas of Maryland, West Virginia, and Virginia, pretty much just had their phones go strictly out of commission. People who tried to make phone calls within their area code either got a very fast busy signal or got one of those infamous your call cannot be connected as dial recordings. Their phones pretty much were useless for calling within the city. And then a couple days later, on July 1st, it happened again. This time it struck in San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Greensboro, North Carolina. And altogether, 12 million people had their phones knocked out in one of these five incidents. And the effects, to put it bluntly, were quite devastating. It's one of these things where you don't realize how important something is until it's gone. A lot of people in these cities didn't realize how much we depend on the telephone these days until you lose it for 8 or 9 hours. Everything from pizza delivery places to stock brokerages could no longer communicate with their customers, and they lost a tremendous amount of business. One stock broker in the Washington, D.C. area said he estimates he lost $25,000 in business just during the 7 hours that his phones were out. And, of course, aside from the business communications, personal communications were also cut off. People could not get in touch with their doctors to consult on medical situations. Parents could not contact daycare centers. So aside from the dollar losses, it caused a lot of anxiety in people in these five cities, certainly. And so it was a kind of, I think, a shocking revelation to people to be confronted with this and realize how important reliable communications are.
What was the problem within the phone system?
Well, that's where the irony of the situation comes in. Nothing was broken in the phone system, really. There was no mechanical problem. Where the failure came, and this is kind of where we get into the era of we're experiencing a new technological nightmare, is because we had a problem in what's called the software programming, the instructions that tell the computers what to do. The situation we had in these five cities was this. Each of the local phone companies in these cities was putting in a new piece of computer programming, a program that would tell the phone companies switching computers how to route the telephone calls. Well, these programs, if you were to spit it out on paper, is about 2 million lines long. And to give you some sort of perspective for that, it's the equivalent of two Manhattan White Pages. Now, in those two Manhattan White Pages, somebody had left out two lines, pretty insignificant error. But what happened was those particular two missing lines obviously were very critical at some point or other to making these phone switching computers work correctly. So on those particular days, the computers ran into a situation where they needed to use those two missing lines. They weren't there, and so the computer suddenly didn't know what to do, and so it simply shut down the system and didn't let anybody complete their calls from that point on.
Now, this is where we get into a different kind of problem than we're used to when we think of computer problems. We're used to thinking that, the computer broke, that something
right.
went wrong with the computer. But in this case, the computer's following the instructions in the computer software, but the instructions were written wrong.
Precisely. Computers are very smart machines on the one hand. They'll do whatever you tell them to do, and they'll do it very well. But at the same time, they're also kind of dumb. A computer will only do what you tell it to do. So in each instance, the computer needs to be told precisely what it has to do. And the problem we're running into is that these computers are becoming so complicated that nobody can anticipate every possible situation that the computer is going to run into. And so sooner or later, what happens is the computer runs into a situation where nobody told it exactly what to do. And so then the computer will either do the wrong thing or it will do nothing and say, hey, nobody told me what to do about this. And either way, you run into some trouble. And this is a very modern phenomenon. It's kind of the price we pay for the modern electronic age. You know, in the old days, when, and I'm not saying we should go back to the old days because things weren't always great back then either, but maybe the one advantage we had was that, say, if you ran a factory or something, you could anticipate breakdowns to some extent. If you ran a factory, say you would know that maybe the bearings in your machine tool would need to be replaced every 50,000 hours and you'd need to replace the machine every year and a half. And you'd have spare parts ready because you knew which parts were prone to break down. The problem with all these new computer systems is you don't know when it's going to break down, you don't know where it's going to break down or what the effects are going to be, and so you're really kind of helpless in terms of you don't know when these problems are going to strike.
Are we in a new era of computer problems? Is software having more problems than it used to just a few years ago?
The situation is this. Computers are advancing at a rate, the experts tell me, of about 15% a year, which means it doubles roughly every 6 years or so. They're just accelerating at an enormous rate. So while computer hardware advances at about 15% a year, the software or programming is advancing only at about 3 or 4% a year. So what that means is that the computer programming is falling behind the advances in computer hardware. So this gap that's developing is growing, and so I think that unless we get a handle on it, we're going to see more of these problems in the future. The problem's probably going to get worse.
Well, let's look at the airline industry, for instance. You say that in airlines, computer software makes air travel safer, but at the same time, computer software also makes air travel more dangerous. That seems like a contradiction.
It is, and that's one of the modern paradoxes we're running into, that these days modern jetliners are crammed with computers. They run the engines, they run the galley ovens, they run just about everything. And so the problem you run into is that in some instances, they make it much safer. They reduce the pilot's workload. They make things much easier in the cockpit. You don't need as many people to run the plane. And in that sense, it becomes much safer. On the flip side of the coin, however, is that these computer systems, when they break down, often leave the pilot helpless. And you know, when the computer breaks down in some of these modern jetliners, the pilot essentially becomes a passenger, and there's not much he can do because the computer's running the plane, and if it malfunctions, oftentimes there aren't backups for these systems. You know, I don't want to scare people and say, oh no, the computer's going to fail and the plane's going to fall out of the sky. But I think what we have to step back and examine is what's the adequate trade-off? If you put more computers into these airplanes, does it actually make them safer? Or are we simply setting ourselves up for a new type of hazard? What we're witnessing these days, I think, is that we're seeing fewer accidents because of mechanical problems. You don't quite see the plane breaking down and causing problems that way. But we're seeing a new sort of phenomenon where the plane crashes even though everything is working correctly. That what happens is that either the computer malfunctions or the pilot, and this happens a lot, misinterprets the information from the computer. That somehow there's some sort of a problem in getting the information from the computer to the pilot, and so the pilot simply, in some instances, flies the plane into the ground. That we've seen some accidents, I think, already, where the pilot was relying on the computer to fly the plane, and so the pilot was thinking, well, gee, if the computer is taking care of the plane, everything must be all right, but everything wasn't all right, and so they ended up having an accident merely because the pilot was assuming, well, if I let the computer fly the plane, everything should be okay. And so I think we have to watch out for some of these new hazards, and I'm not quite sure that the industry is fully aware of this. They are taking some steps, but I think we really have to watch out for some of these new hazards that are being created and make sure they don't get out of hand.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. And my guest is Leonard Lee. He's the author of the new book, The Day the Phone Stopped, The Computer Crisis. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about some of the latest problems that we've been experiencing because of computers and computer software, and my guest is Leonard Lee, author of the new book, The Day the Phone Stopped, The Computer Crisis. Let's look at some of the other areas in which computers and computer software are leaving more room for error. In the area of medicine, an example you give in your book is radiation therapy. Sometimes, rarely, but sometimes that goes wrong because of computer problems.
That's one of the scariest things that I encountered when I was researching the book, was that back in 1986, three patients died in Texas and Canada of radiation overdoses because there was a computer software programming error in a particular radiation therapy machine. And this, I think, shows two things. One, how dangerous computer errors can be sometimes when you use them in very critical situations, like in medicine. And the other thing is that how you can't really predict these errors. This particular machine had worked fine for years in more than two dozen installations around the U.S. And so people had come to rely on this machine, but all of a sudden there was one particular tiny error that suddenly in 1987 sprang to life and caused these three malfunctions. And this is a concern that seems to be growing. In 1989, the Food and Drug Administration had to recall 34 different computerized medical devices, much of it because of problems in the software programming. And that figure of recalls they had tripled in only 5 years. And again, I'm not trying to say, you know, we shouldn't move ahead with computers in this area because they allow you to do a lot more things and are responsible for some great advances in medical treatment. And so you can get tremendous benefits when you put computers into these devices. All I'm saying is I think we have to be a little more careful in making sure that these are tested properly and developed properly, and that we have the proper government regulatory oversight to try and minimize these types of problems.
Let's use the example again of the recent telephone system problems that several states experienced. When they finally figured out that the problem wasn't a computer virus, but it was just the way the software was written, it was in the software itself. I mean, how do you find out where the problem is? If the instructions that the computer is following is so long and so complicated, how do you find the problem?
Tracking down these problems would probably tax Sherlock Holmes. It makes the needle in the looking for a needle in the haystack easy by comparison. Look at it this way: the particular computer program that malfunctioned in the phone systems was about 2.1 million lines long, and that's equivalent to two or three Los Angeles telephone books. Now, imagine trying to look through three LA telephone books and trying to find a missing dot over a single I. And that gives you some idea how tough it is to track down these things. They're tremendously complicated, and it takes a lot of good sleuth work to track it down. And again, that's part of the problem, is that these systems are more reliable. I don't want to knock them. They are very good systems when they work. But the flip side is, when they fail, it's a hellacious job to try and track down exactly where it went wrong.
You have an example in your book, which I'm going to ask you to share with everybody, and that's an example of why it's so difficult to write a computer program. And you compare writing a computer program to giving a friend directions how to get to your house.
Sure. You know, if you were to tell a friend how to get to your house, you might think it's easy. You might tell them, well, okay, go down to the third stoplight, take a left, go north on Bridge Street, and go down five blocks. But let's make it a little more complicated. Let's say you have to tell your friend how to drive from his house, which is in Seattle, down to your house in Miami. And you literally have to instruct them every single curve, every single stoplight, stop sign. What do they do? Do they go straight? Do they go left? How far do they go? Now let's make it even more complicated. Let's say you have to define all your terms. You have to tell them, well, what do you mean by north? How long is a city block? How long is a mile? Now let's make it a little more complicated. Let's assume this person knows nothing. You have to tell them how to drive a car. Okay, even worse. You have to explain to them what is a car. Now try and sit down and give your friend directions on how to get from Seattle to your house in Miami. That's essentially what you have to do when you program a computer. Because when you start with a computer, it's a blank sheet of paper. It'll do whatever you tell it to do, but when you start out, the computer knows zip, absolutely nothing. So say you have to write out these directions in that kind of excruciating detail, you know, explaining how to work a car, how to figure out geographic directions, and then try and explain the directions to make this 4,000-mile journey or whatever. When you do that, what do you think the chances are that you got everything correctly, that your friend will be able to navigate this trip on the first try? It's almost impossible, and yet that's the kind of situation that a computer programmer faces every time.
Leonard Lee is my guest, and he's the author of the new book, The Day the Phones Stopped the Computer Crisis. Let's look at the kind of computer problems we're talking about in the context of the recent war in the Gulf, in which we relied so much on computer weapons, smart weapons. Tell us something about how it looks from the vantage point of your research.
Well, there's no doubt that most of the Pentagon weapons were a tremendous success in the Persian Gulf War and did a lot better than a lot of skeptics had predicted. And we saw the success of these laser-guided smart bombs and the stealth fighters and the cruise missiles, which really were an example of dazzling technology and how effective it is when it works. But a couple of stories didn't come out of the Gulf War. One is that the B-1 bomber, perhaps the most advanced weapon in the U.S. arsenal, never went to the Persian Gulf. Now, the Air Force tried to say it was because, oh, we need the bomber here at home to protect us in case the Russians attack. But really what the situation was that the Pentagon didn't send the bomber to the Gulf because it doesn't work. Ever since it first came off the assembly line, the B-1B has been plagued with a number of problems, mostly in its computer software. Its electronic defenses don't work, and the Pentagon, I think, was simply afraid to send it into that kind of a war environment. Also, even in one of the Pentagon's success stories, the Patriot missile, there was another side to that. The listeners might recall that in February, we had the situation where the Scud missile struck the barracks in Dahran and killed 28 Desert Storm Service personnel. The worst single day of casualties, I believe, in the Gulf War. And what happened was the Patriot missile system, which had worked so well to that point, failed to knock out the Scud because there was, yes, a small computer software glitch that caused the Patriot to shut down and ignore the incoming Scud missile. And so I think this just goes to show that the weapons can work very well, but again, you have to be prepared for problems now and then. And I think the situation is getting worse. There was a report out of ABC the other day that said the new B-2 stealth bomber is riddled with these types of software problems. There was a recent government study out that said 7 out of every 10 new Pentagon weapons coming down the line is experiencing software problems. And what does that mean? Well, likely it means the project will either be late, it will be over budget, or it will not work correctly when it's done, or a combination of the three. Earlier this year, the Pentagon canceled the A-12, which was to be the Navy's stealth attack plane. And part of the reason for the cancellation was that the contractors in this case simply could not develop the computer software needed to run these types of advanced weapons. And so I think we're seeing a situation where if the Pentagon doesn't get a handle on this, we're going to end up with a lot of weapons that are either very expensive when they do work or may not work correctly. And I don't think either situation is very good.
Leonard, let me ask you if you had any personal problems with computers that led you to write this book and do the research.
It's funny you should mention, I kind of ended up being bit by the hand that fed me, so to speak. I freely admit I wrote the book on my computer. That, you know, I couldn't have written it without a computer and the wonderful software programs that I have. And so that again shows you, you know, we can't do without computers. They are wonderful devices. But this computer did reach out and bite me. The week after I had finished it, I sent the manuscript into the publisher. And then the very next day, I turned on my computer, and the book was gone.
I mean, no.
It had been reduced into gibberish. The book had taken all the words and shuffled them together as if it had taken all my chapters and thrown them up in the air and caught them in a random order. And so it served as a good lesson to me, too, that these devices are wonderful, but every once in a while they're going to reach out and get you.
So sum up the cautionary advice that you have. You're not saying let's do away with computers.
Oh, not at all. You know, computers are great. they make our life so much better in everything they do. They make business more efficient. They make your personal life more efficient. They make our cars run more fuel efficiently and burn cleaner. As I said, we couldn't have modern air travel without them. No, I'm not suggesting in any way that we should do without computers. But what I am saying is we do have to keep a watchful eye on them. We can't rely on them for everything. And when we do use them, you always have to keep in the back of your mind, well, what happens if the computer fails? Too often, I think people are caught without having thought through that type of scenario. What we witnessed with the phones a couple weeks ago is a good example, that we're moving away from having any sort of a mechanical backup. We're just leaving everything to the computer. And that's great when it works fine, but when the computer goes down, well, you're sure they had a backup, but the backup turned out to be another computer. And so that's where you get into trouble. You always have to leave yourself open and leave yourself an out for what happens if the computer goes wrong. And we also need to do more on the technical end of it. There's no doubt that we need more research into how to write better computer software. There are some technologies out there. We do know how to write better software that's more reliable and safer. But I think we need to put more effort into that. There's a bill before Congress right now that would start to direct more federal funding for this type of research. And that's what I think we need is not only more attention to the problem, but we need to be devoting more resources to this before the situation kind of gets out of hand.
Leonard Lee, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Terry.
And Leonard Lee is a journalist and author of the new book, The Day the Phones Stopped, The Computer Crisis, The What and Why of It, and How We Can Beat It. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.